Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Roots of American Music Lift Their Voices podcast series. We have a full room of voices today who we're going to be talking to. And we're going to be talking specifically about the generations, the passing of music from teachers to students, parents to children, something that's very, very important to the mission of Roots of American Music. And something that's encapsulated in their mission every single day. Before I introduce everybody, I'm actually going to introduce one of the board members of the Roots of American Music. George Blake is with us, and he's going to kick us off by talking to our very special guests today, Reggie Bowens and Dr. William Woods. Hi, George.
Hello, Craig.
So first of all, before we get to our guests, tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your position as a board member on Roots of American Music, please.
Yeah, so I've been on the board for about 2 years, and that kind of emerged in connection with my work as a faculty member at Case Western Reserve University, where I teach courses on Cleveland music, and I teach other courses as well. But the kind of route to this position really emerged when I was doing some field work in Cleveland many years ago, and I interviewed Reggie Bowens, who is someone I grew up with playing music through the Tri-C Jazz Preparatory Program and through the Music Settlement. And I also interviewed various other musicians in town, and I was really trying to get a sense of what is Cleveland music all about? How are there all these great musicians in town? Where do they come from? And, you know, and a name that kept coming up with was Dr. William Woods. Lafayette Carthon was like, oh, Dr. Woods is just an amazing figure in the Cleveland scene. He's really made it happen. And Reggie, who I'd known from Tri-C and the Music Settlement, was like, oh, you got to talk to Dr. Woods. So that was another moment where I was able to reach out and interview Dr. Woods as part of getting a picture of where do all these great musicians come from. And educators is a big part of that story.
So a big part of this series, the Lift Their Voices podcast series, is that it also corresponds with special performances at the Bop Stop, and this episode is no exception. Next Sunday, March 13th, from 2 to 4:30 at the Bop Stop, Reggie Bowens Quartet is going to be playing. Dr. Woods is going to be there, and there are some other performers who will be performing in front of their teachers. It's a whole kind of generations theme. And with that, I'll plug that again at the end. But George, why don't you take it away and talk to Reggie and Dr. Woods?
Well, great. Thank you so much. I think I'll ask Reggie the first question. And just, Reggie, could you say a little bit about what Dr. Woods has meant to you as a student, and also a little bit about how you function and work as a teacher these days?
For sure. Thanks again for having me on the call today. I met Dr. Woods, I guess it was in the sixth grade. I was an instrumental music major at the time, so I wasn't able to be in the choir until the ninth grade year when I got into the jazz choir. So got involved in the jazz choir, and Dr. Woods, he opened my eyes up to vocal jazz in an ensemble setting, a chamber setting, and also as a jazz pianist. And I did some other private lesson work with a few instructors, but I remember specifically Dr. Woods sitting down to teach me about the blues, and through some Miles Davis tunes, especially All Blues. We sang a New York Voices arrangement of that back in high school, and he showed me this way of comping or accompanying the singers that just made sense. And so that was one of my earliest memories of Dr. Woods influencing me in that regard. And then even just getting exposed to different groups like the Manhattan Transfer and Take Six. We did some of those different tunes. I think we did like Birdland and Nightingale and Berkeley Square. And I remember being interested to transcribe some Take Six when I was in high school, and Dr. Woods let me do it on his computer. I think I was working on Getaway Jordan, which was over 15 years ago. I don't think I ever finished that. But yeah.
Was that on Finale, Reggie?
It was on Finale. As a matter of fact, Dr. Woods gave me his Finale CD to install it on our home computer. I think it was Finale 2002. That's exactly the one it was, because I had 2001. And so, yeah, I mean, Dr. Woods has been a part of my life since then. You know, as you know, as a fellow educator now, you know, I'm able to reach out to him. I remember in the early years of my summer a cappella camp, just trying to build that program for teenagers, I would always reach out to Dr. Woods, like, hey, you have any students who would do this? And he would always have many students, great students, great and talented. And it also made the transition easy because they had some of the same instruction that I had received. And so I'm really grateful to be a part of this event, to be able to tribute him. He has been very impactful in my life. To spend a little time with him maybe a year ago, I think, did a dinner at his house and got to cook a little bit for him. And so, but yeah.
Great. Thanks, Reggie. It was a vegan. Did you cook vegan for Dr. Woods?
Doc, did you have salmon or did you have the vegan meal?
It was salmon.
Right on.
It was very, very well done. Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
Reggie's known for his vegan and his salmon cooking in town. So Dr. Woods, could you say a little bit about your experience as a teacher, and maybe do you have any influences you could tell us about? Were there any educators who influenced you before you got into being a teacher?
Well, first of all, starting with jazz, I came from a family of jazz lovers, not musicians, but the lovers. Jazz was always present in our house on the radio, through phonographs. And I started piano at a very early age. So I think I started playing piano when I was about 6, maybe 7 years old. But I didn't get, you know, I didn't get into jazz studies or anything like that until I had gotten into college. So I went to Tennessee State University, which had a strong jazz program, and was able to hang out with some of the more polished musicians, and to, you know, to watch them practice and to watch them rehearse. And then got my degree. Really, I am an organ major. And when I was in college, I was majored in the pipe organ, not the piano. I changed from piano to pipe organ. So, but I kept that jazz, you know, in my bones, even though I didn't play it on the pipe organ, and nor was I allowed to even do that. But, you know, it was very instrumental in my upbringing. And then when I got to the Cleveland School of the Arts, and I was there, I suppose, about, I think I taught there for 36 years. But my first year there, I wanted to teach the students not only the Beethoven and the Mozart and that stuff, but also I wanted them to be well-rounded. And I was wanting to be a well-rounded teacher myself. You cannot be successful today in music unless you have to be diverse. You have to be able to teach just about everything. So when I got there was a choir, and I formed a group called the Meistersingers, you know, and, you know, Meistersingers meaning that, okay, this is a German type group which would sing madrigals and things like that in German and Italian and French. But then I wanted this group to be diverse. So I started teaching the Meistersingers some jazz music. And so I changed the name from the Meistersingers to the Jazz Art Ensemble. And that's where Reggie comes in. As he was a member of the Jazz Art Ensemble. And this was a school in the inner city district of Cleveland. And these are students I thought were just as capable of learning all types of music, jazz, classical, and doing it as well as anybody else. And so what I did is I knocked into them this idea that they can achieve this music. And the concert choir ended up singing in German, in French, and we even did the Chester Psalms, and it's only written in Hebrew. So we went up to the temple and did that in Hebrew, but maintained the singers of the Jazz Art Ensemble. And so I had some very talented students, though, and Reggie was one of them. I mean, he was super talented. He came, yes, in the sixth grade. He had perfect pitch. I tested him. You know, I would have him face the wall. I would play a note, and he would ask me, you know, and I would ask him to tell me, what is that note? He named every note. And then I would ask him to sing a note, sing an A flat for me. And he was singing A flat. Of course, I didn't have perfect pitch, so I used the piano to test him. And so he was an outstanding student. He and many others. I won't name the rest of them because I don't want to be accused of leaving off, you know, leaving somebody off, leaving their names out. But he was a very good student. He was a superior student. He was alert to intonation, to ensemble. And if you know him, those and you do know him, you know that I'm telling the truth about him, that he's an outstanding musician and an outstanding student. He went to Howard University as a math major, I think, started as a math major. But I didn't say anything when he told me he was going to major in mathematics. I knew that one day he'd come back and tell me that he now is a music major, and that's what happened. So, you know, he's outstanding. So it's been a pleasure working with him and other students. I will mention one other student. I cannot help but mention Lauren Talese. Lauren, you know, she's a jazz vocalist out of Philadelphia. She has many CDs, and she did a what do you call this? A video, my wife and me, when she tried to make it as though when we first met. And at that time, we had been married for 53 years. So, and she did a very good job of that. But and she and others are doing very, very well with their music. I'm very proud of them. And it was a pleasure for me to serve all of these students at the Cleveland School of the Arts. And also, I talked then before going to CSA. I taught at West Technical High School. It was a very successful program. And also, I taught at John Hay. And that was another successful program.
Great. Thanks so much, Dr. Woods. You know, not everybody can be a Reggie Bowens, you know, with perfect pitch, who's just coming in with his trombone and then singing and then doing all the things. But, you know, I think that the role that a music teacher plays is sometimes in instilling habits of rigor or instilling things that aren't just about musical paths. So maybe, Reggie, is that something you could talk a little bit about in your own teaching? Is there, what are some of the values that kind of come through music teaching beyond just becoming a great musician?
Well, so I'm going to go back. I feel like back in elementary school, well, I say Dr. Woods was one of the first, if not the first, African-American male instructor I had. I don't recall having any in elementary school. And so I had a different connection with him than I had to any of my other instructors. And I had some amazing instructors, but there was something different about our connection. We know that Dr. Woods, and still he was and still is, a no-nonsense kind of guy. You know, and that sort of discipline is what kept the group, you know, going and being able to operate, you know, having such a structure where you knew this instructor was coming from a place of love, but also a place of, you know, trying to get you focused and to learn. I mean, like you said, he's teaching us all this diversity. And I think about all the different types of gigs that I do now that are not only in jazz, you know, I have pockets here and there. And it's because Dr. Woods pushed us into these different areas to utilize, you know, all of our God-given gifts. So, yeah, I mean, the value of being in the moment and contributing your best, being willing. I remember, I have to tell this story. I think it was in ninth grade, maybe. Dr. Woods had me do a blues. You remember Dr. Woods, the Clark Terry. Mumbles. So I had sang the tune. So it's a completely syllabic tune. It's, you know, there's nothing lyrical about it, but it's a blues. And there's a trombone solo in the middle of the tune. So when I had that, you know, opportunity to play trombone, that's what I was majoring in. That was cool. But one particular gig, I didn't know we were going to do this tune. And so Dr. Wood said, well, can you scat? And I'm like, ooh, I don't think I've ever done that before. You know, I've only seen you know, different recordings maybe, or the different ensemble charts we had, you know, written solis and things of that nature. And so that was my introduction. That's the first time I remember scatting, was when I didn't have my trombone. And So I thank Dr. Woods for pushing me. I mean, scatting is what I love to do that now. But at that time, it was terrifying. It was terrifying.
But may I add to that, he had a trombone solo that night. I never will forget this particular event. And his singing, his scatting, and his trombone soloing was so intense, and it was so hot on stage. I mean, he was soaking wet with perspiration. He wore glasses. His glasses were on the side of his head, almost falling off. I mean, he was really intense into that solo, which was done very, very well. But I'd like to add this as well. In teaching Reggie and all of the students who have successfully come through the music program at CSA, you know, there were times where I did not teach music at all. I taught them life. And sometimes they would come in, sometimes for a week, that would be, I would say, I wouldn't call these lectures, but these were forced conversations about life and what's expected of you and what you should do. And, you know, and sometimes it's something like one person who disobeyed a rule, a school rule, one of our rules, they disobeyed that rule. And so we had to let all of the students know that this was wrong. I don't expect this from you. And so there were times when we did not deal in music at all, but we dealt with life. And one thing I always did, if you broke a rule, if you did something wrong, you were punished somehow. And it made no difference what your status was in me. It was me, you know. It could have been my own daughter, which it was not. But, you know, everybody was treated the same way, sometimes brutally, but the same. Yes.
Right on. Well, thank you. Well, you know, I think one thing that has come to mind is kind of the question of mobility. And I know, Reggie, you've studied here, you've studied elsewhere, you've traveled around a bit. And Dr. Woods, I know you've taken students on tours. Maybe, Dr. Woods, would it be possible to reflect a little bit on, you know, sometimes Cleveland is called Alabama North. Is there anything from the kind of sensibility of music in Alabama that you brought here? And then could you say a little bit about the students traveling that you taught?
Sure. First of all, Alabama. Yes, I am from Alabama, as you may know, and that's the South. One thing that I wanted the students to understand, and this was not jazz. This would be with all of my students, is the power, of the African American spiritual. And so, the choirs that I had at CSA. They were trained to sound like the HBCU schools in the South, that spiritual singing of, you know, the singing of a spirit of African-American spirituals, because you don't get that now. And it, you know, and I can say that the training that I had from there, the association that I had, one was Wendell Whalum, who was at Morehouse College. He came to Cleveland. He spent a whole day with me and my choir. He left us some of his arrangements. And of course, on the day that we learned of his death, we had our own little memorial program right there at CSA doing the pieces that he had left for us and that we had learned, you know. So that Southern HBCU sound is what I really drove for. A pure sound, a nice sound. Mm-hmm. And then when we went on tour, we had two major tours. One was in Japan, Saitama, Japan, and I took most members of the jazz out ensemble, not all of them, and then a few members of the concert choir. And we did our music. We did madrigals. We did movements from the Requiem, from the Mozart Requiem, and we also did the African American spiritual, which they loved very, very well. That brought down the house. And then I took another group later on to Europe. We went to Austria, went to Vienna, went to Augsburg. I can't think of the name, but anyway, we had, there were three stops in Austria, and this was a Mozart festival, and the kids were able to meet Mrs. Alice Parker, an outstanding composer, and actually we were at a banquet, and they asked the CSA students, would you please render a song for us at this banquet? And at that time, I didn't know that Alice Parker was going to be there, that she was there. So the first piece that we sang, did two pieces arranged by her. And lo and behold, on the next day at a luncheon, I sat right next to her, and she complimented the group. And then she told me who she was. I said, no, wait a minute, you're not the Alice Parker. She said, yes, I'm that Alice Parker. So, and then there have been some other tours to Washington, D.C., and many, many colleges from around here, and also in Allegheny College in Pennsylvania. So it's been very, very rewarding. Right.
So one of the things that I've got the benefit of while we're conducting this interview is while Dr. Woods is talking, I'm watching Reggie smile big and nod his head and show all this energy and passion. And I wondered, when it comes to educating, when it comes to teaching, when it comes to having learned, how much, and you already talked about how so much more of teaching music is not just technical musical things, it's life, it's passion, it's energy. So Reggie, if you could talk a little bit about that as a student, you know, how did you pick that up as a student, and how do you think about that when you're teaching students today, teaching kind of the what we would consider the intangibles around music?
I think during my time as a student at School of the Arts with Doc, I probably didn't always get it, you know, just not being capable of that, you know, because of maturity and things of that nature. As I got older, and as a matter of fact, I remember one of those disciplinary actions I received that I was granted, you know, I deserved it. I wanted to change my major. I was an instrumental music major, and I wanted to change my major to vocal music to be with Dr. Woods. But it was an afterthought after me, I would say, acting up in one of my classes with an instrumental instructor. And he was not in support of me changing my major to vocal music. Not because of talent or anything, but it was one of those things. You know, you have to learn from your mistake. You know, and I wasn't happy. I think when I got to the car, my mom, it was a meeting with my mom and the principal, and it was a big thing. And I got to the car and I just cried. That was also the same day I got my Howard University acceptance letter. So that was, it kind of helped a little bit, but you know. Mm-hmm. But I reflect on those things as, you know, as a teacher now, because one of the things I can say, Dr. Woods always made us feel comfortable, and made me feel comfortable to be able to talk to him and know that he's going to give you a response that's coming with a bunch of wisdom and experience, but also just, you know, he's real. You know, it's not I'm going to try to formulate this, you know, academia way of uncovering this. No, he would just get to the nitty-gritty with us and tell us what it was. And so I have to use that, you know, in my teaching. I want my students to find that balance, you know, of being able to talk. I get students who talk to me about just real life things the same way I would go to Dr. Woods. And, you know, sometimes still can have those conversations with them.
And for you, Dr. Woods, kind of the same question. Mm-hmm. How much did you think about that as you were dedicating yourself to education? How much of it was intentional, and how much of it just came naturally to teach the important lessons around technical music?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to have respect for your students, even when they need to be disciplined. And what I tried to do is teach them as I would my own children. Okay, but I'll tell you, I can sum this up in a sentence. An old teacher, when I was just a beginner, a man sat me down as I attempted to discipline a student. And he told me this, and I've always passed this on to other teachers. You know, when it comes to discipline, never allow the student to go away angry. No matter what your punishment is, you know, explain to them the situation, but don't allow them to go away in anger. You know, and so that's the way I taught all of my kids, and I think it really played out, because there was never a major problem for a student who had misbehaved or had gotten off the track. And now they also need to understand that, you know, music is technical. If you can do this music, you can solve that math problem. Because in music, the notes have to be in place. If you're a violinist or a trombonist, as he was, you know, your slide must be in place. That note has to be in tune. If you're taking, if you're doing geometry, the numbers, the charts, everything has to be in place. Or else the problem is wrong, and so is the music. And so this is the way we always taught them. You know, and I can say this, I've never had, maybe on one occasion, has the choirs that I've had, on one occasion, no more than two, have they sung out of tune. Everybody was in tune, a cappella, perfectly tuned. Because, you know, we worked on that. This is an A flat, not an A natural. There's a difference.
So I just want to remind everybody that Reggie Bowen's quartet is going to be playing at the Bop Stop Sunday, March 13th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. There are going to be some other performers there as well, performing pieces for their teachers. I'm going to turn it back over to George now, and he's going to continue kind of on our theme about generations.
Thanks so much, Craig. You know, I think one thing that's really interesting to me is the idea of being a complete musician is what some people say, but there's also the question of what is taught in schools. And so Reggie, I'm wondering, could you say a little bit about some of the things you teach? Have you found any inspiration into maybe bringing in new curricular ideas to your teaching? Is there any connection to your gospel piano class that emerges from Dr. Woods? Could you talk about that?
For sure. I'm always interested in innovations and things of that nature in the classroom. I'm in the classroom right now as a student. For those who don't know, I'm back in school at Eastman in New York. So I get to be back on the other side a little bit, but I also have my assistantship responsibilities, which are new for me, teaching history courses and things of that nature. But yeah, I love to be able to expand what we do in academia. I think sometimes academia, that world can be it can be such a narrow path, and you can't waver a little bit, you know, or it's wrong, quote unquote wrong. But music is so much greater than that. And I love the fact that a lot of universities and institutions are starting to implement popular music programs, because that's what the students want right now. And I don't think we should substitute, you know, at all. No, I think there's a lot of foundations that you can get in studying Western classical music, studying jazz music, things of that nature. So I did develop a course in gospel piano before I left for school at Cleveland State. And so I was teaching private lessons in gospel piano there. And then I also have my summer a cappella camp and a lot of the a cappella world, you know, today as a genre is based in pop music versus, you know, some of the early doo-wop stuff or the things we might think of in a cappella in the academia world. Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you so much. And I guess, you know, so Roots of American Music is an organization in Cleveland that is trying to promote music to all different ages and to try to teach various musical styles as well. I guess perhaps we could say a little bit have Kevin talk a little bit about what Rome's mission has been in that regard?
Sure, George, I'd be glad to speak up here. You know, the focus of Roots of American Music, you know, we want to preserve and present and educate through traditional American music. And we're big fans of gospel, big fans of the blues and jazz, early American jazz, and the later jazzes of Miles Davis and Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. But we also love Appalachian banjos and fiddles and early country music, honky-tonk music. So there's basically black and white cultures coming together. It's European comes together with Africa, and we like all those different styles. We understand that kids today, they love these other styles of music, but we try to introduce them to some of these earlier forms. I think a good example is we have a K-3 program with Cleveland schools called Blues is the Backbone. And, you've got first graders, second graders. They're learning the basics of music that you would in any music class, rhythm and pitch and different things. But they're also introduced to 12-bar formats, and they get to write a little blues song. They get to learn about, let's say, Lead Belly or Muddy Waters or Howlin' Wolf or Big Mama Thornton. So they're exposed to these to their own heritage and to their own culture, but they may not even know it's theirs. And so it's education is great, roots music is great, and that's what I believe and hope to pass on and hope other people embrace it.
Great. Thanks so much, Kevin. And Dr. Woods, do you think you could leave us with a few words of advice for people who are aspiring to be teachers, people who are teaching today? What are some things that we should know at Roots of American Music and teaching music and for anyone who's teaching music anywhere?
Yes. To emphasize the academic end of music, which is, to me, is music theory. Also music history, that can be also, but theory is important. And I think students today need theory. They need to know the structure of all these pieces, and especially the jazz pieces. They are so limited when it comes to theory. I think the one fault I have at the Cleveland School of the Arts is that not enough emphasis over the years has been put on teaching theory. When I started there, we had theories 1 and 2, beginning theory and advanced theory. And then the students could go into actually composition and arranging if they wanted to take an elective in this senior year. But I would like to see the students more prepared in theory and in teaching real good music. It doesn't have to be jazz. But when you go to these music reading sessions, and I stopped going years ago. Now, this is a complaint. You probably would cut this. But I would only, if we read through 100 pieces that day, I would keep about 5. The rest of the music was junk. So we have to separate the junk from the real music and teach that. Good music it can be difficult, but good music can be easy to teach. It may not be easy, but it could be easy to teach. And when it's well written and well constructed, and by the way, have the students understand what the composer had in mind when he wrote this composition. That's one thing I think, Reggie, we forgot to mention that. But in every composition that I ever taught, jazz or other, there was always a whole period, class period, an hour, talking about the piece and how it was constructed and why it was constructed. That's very important. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Reggie, any sneak previews of any of the tunes you're going to do at the performance, and maybe an hour or two explanation of who wrote them and what they're about and how they're structured?
Yeah, I'll give a short kind of a spoiler. So these sets that we're going to perform at the event next weekend, the first set I'm going to mostly do pieces that I perform as an artist. And so, and kind of the world of my artistry, I've been focusing on sacred jazz a lot. So merging the sacred world and the jazz world. So singing a lot of jazz tunes, singing a lot of hymnals and sacred tunes in a jazz context. That's what I meant. And some of those things, like I said, learned from Dr. Woods, you know, with Take Six. And then the second set is going to be, it's going to feature some things I learned from Dr. Woods specifically.
All right. Well, I just I want to remind everybody that that's Sunday, March 13th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. at the Bop Stop. We hope to see you all there. On behalf of everybody on the podcast today, I just want to thank George for conducting the interview. And I want to thank our guests, Dr. Woods, Reggie Bowens, and Kevin Richards. Thanks so much for sharing with us, and hope to see everybody out at the Bop Stop.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.